Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery. We got two guests headed your way, and we also have two cards to cover. It's going to be Bellator 301, which takes place this Friday, and it's in Chicago, Illinois, with two title fights and also semifinal of their lightweight Grand Prix that they started a bit ago. I want to say about a year ago. So that's a pretty big card for Bellator. And I know there's a lot of uncertainty around it, but look, the fighters are going to do their job. They're going to go out there and perform. And if you're ever bitching about Bellator, give us a good card. This is a pretty solid card. We'll also go over the fight night coming up as well. Allen versus Craig. It's in Las Vegas at the Apex. It's got some good fights, including Jake Matthews versus Michael Morales. Amanda Hevas, her fights never suck, that's for sure. Jordan Levitt, Chase Hooper, so pretty decent offering by the UFC. Our guests are going to be Kenny Florian from PFL. They get down next week on Black Friday, 1 week from this Friday. So we'll talk to him about that card. And then we also have another guest. He's a younger fighter named Baris Adigazel, who is 4-1, has just recently fought at Cage Warriors. And look, we got a solid pitch, so we said, sure, we'll talk to him. So we'll reset, and we'll come back and start the show. All right, Ghost. So, Bellator, what do you think is going to happen? Just, you know, if you had to guess, is it just the whole PFL thing? And we had a good conversation with the CEO of PFL, and he basically laid it out in a way where, like, it's just a matter of time before we announce it. I got a little bit of that vibe. I got a vibe of, hey, look, we really want it. That's why we're still in talks. What do you think, man, at the end of the day, after this card's done, what do you think happens?
I wouldn't be shocked if I think it's the end of Bellator as we know it. But I wouldn't be shocked if the PFL purchased Bellator and run it independently for a little bit. You know, that's a year, maybe 2 years max. But if you look at the plans that the PFL has and the roster that they have, I don't know that it adds up. Because if you want to do pay-per-view, everybody's going to want to be on pay-per-view if you're in the PFL. You're going to want to be on those cards. Seasons are rough. There are some fighters that do welcome that type of challenge. But if you get that influx of talent that Bellator can provide, well, now it seems like you could do a little bit more. Maybe you can sustain doing a season format and a pay-per-view. I think you could do something like that if you absorb that Bellator roster. So the question is, does Bellator operate as Bellator under the PFL for a while, or does the complete roster filter over? What do the contracts say? You know, I don't know. But I do have those vibes that as far as the Scott Coker era and Bellator goes, I don't know if we're going to have that anymore.
Do you think we'll have an announcement at Bellator 301?
It's quite possible.
Well, it's reason to tune in, I suppose. You got Yaroslav Amosov versus Jason Jackson. Amosov is the undefeated Ukrainian fighter who is trying to notch another title defense. And Jason Jackson's put together a nice win streak and is well-deserved of that title shot. That should be a good one. And then you got Sergio Pettis, the undisputed bantamweight champion, against Patchy Mix, the interim bantamweight champion. Mm-hmm. So this is a title unification bout. And it's already been a big year for Patchy Mix. So he won the interim title from Rafion Stotts, who was defending the interim title while Sergio Pettis was kind of sitting on the sidelines recovering from an injury. He won that belt. He won the Grand Prix belt. He won $1 million. Now he's going for this belt. And quite the resume that young fellas put together. So yeah. I'm pretty into that one as well. And then you have Shabali versus Patricky Pitbull for the semifinal, in which the winner meets Usman Nurmagomedov, although he's on a 6-month suspension. So we don't even know what's going to happen, because his last fight really is declared a no contest. So it's almost like he didn't win, you know. And so how are they going to treat that? That's going to be interesting to me as well. You know what they could do? Boy, I wish I would have tuned in a little bit to the press conferences or interviews that they did today. I'm going to go back and check it out. I apologize, but I just thought of this right now, honestly. I wonder if they could just make this a final. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know Adrian McKee's also saying, put me in, coach. You know, Bellator would love to have some of that. It's just there really is no Bellator 302 that we're hearing about. So that's why I think Bellator is over and someone's just going to buy them out and take their athletes.
I would think if they keep going, why not have, if AJ McKee can get through his fight, why not, I don't know. This is so messed up. But look, it doesn't get any better than what's at the top, right? Patchy Mix and Sergio Pettis. That fight, there's a lot on the line, not just for Bellator, but just in MMA in general, and Patchy Mix, like, he gets a win there, and especially if it's like if he comes in and completely starches this kid, he's got a pretty good case to say, I may be one of the best bantamweights in the world. You mm-hmm. know, when you look at what he's been able to accomplish, it's pretty damn impressive. So I think if you look at that, if you look at Amosov, right, and what he's accomplished too, like, he's kind of in those talks in his division as well. So I think this is one of the better cards. I'm super excited for it. I just wish we had that knowledge, because if it is the last one, I kind of want to know before it's over, you know, like, I'd want to have that feeling. I wouldn't want to just wake up one day and say there's no more, you know, that's mm-hmm. just kind of weird to me. So hopefully there is some clarity soon.
Yeah. They need to clear up that Grand Prix. They need to clear up Bellator. I mean, because what happens, Primus lost to Usman in a way, but it's a no contest. So is Primus still in the Grand Prix? And would they want to wait 6 months for Usman to come back? In fact, should they strip Usman and Magomedov? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. There's so much going on here that I was just thinking, could Shabali and Pitbull be a title fight and just say three title fights, you know, exit, stage left? But I guess we'll just have to tune in. It's going to be on Showtime. It'll be the last time that you see Bellator on Showtime. They're getting away from boxing and MMA. So, you know, some significance there. And Junkie has you covered, because we have Matt Erickson there. So he was there asking questions of Pettis and Mix and Amosov and everyone else out in Chicago, Illinois. So we have great coverage there. And again, the fights are this Friday on Showtime. This could be it right here. All right, let's talk about UFC. UFC's got a fight card as well. It's a fight night with Paul Craig and Brendan Allen in the main event. So these are middleweights. Remember, Craig's dropped from light heavyweight, where he was decent. He wasn't a joke. And now he's fighting as a middleweight. And I thought he was already pretty cut up to begin with. But not bad, man. He debuted against Andre Muniz, and beat him. So he's ready to go against Brendan Allen. He's already getting tough customers. You know what I mean? He's not getting cupcakes.
Against Paul Craig?
Craig is, yeah. He got Muniz in his first one, and now he's got Brendan Allen.
He had one. No, you're confusing that on me. He had one more fight, too, after that. Brendan Allen did.
I'm talking about Paul Craig. Since he dropped from light heavyweight, he beat Andre Muniz. Now he has Brendan Allen.
Because Brendan Allen beat Muniz too, and then he fought somebody else. I can't remember who it was, but
Bruno Silva.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that so he's be, like on a 5 or 6 fight win streak.
That should be a great fight, dude. I really think it's going to be a fun one.
I agree.
There's like these, they did a good job of kind of putting these people that matter in certain situations enough. when you think about like Amanda Ribas, I'm still left with that last fight she had that was absolutely savage.
Tracy Barber?
Yeah. So like it really doesn't even matter who you have seen. It doesn't matter who you put in front of her. She made me such a big fan of her fights that I'm down. Like, you know, you hear some of these certain names on this card. Yeah. I'm totally down for all this. You know, I'm just curious. I'm a Vegas guy. You're a Vegas guy, but you're in Peru right now. I wonder how much the United States is going to be watching this F1 race here in Las Vegas. Because it is all weird. It's like the Super Bowl's in town right now, George. When you turn on the news, that's all they're talking about. F1. I wonder how many people are going to be tuning into the stuff going on with these races and the actual race, and may just, you know, thankfully it should be going off right around the time the UFC has already signed off. But, you know, you only have early. You only have so much time to invest in your day. You know, like you can't just spend your whole day watching TV too. There's college sports going on. There's a lot going on. You know, there's a lot of pros doing their thing too. So you only have so much time to sit there and watch things. And right now F1's making it seem like it's an event that you just can't miss. And I know you got to set that time aside. And to do that, something's got to go.
Yeah, I looked at it earlier. So the UFC Fight Night card, it starts early on Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Then the main card is at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. So that 2 p.m. Pacific for us is going to be a 3-hour fight card. It'll end at 5 p.m. And there's plenty of room to go have dinner or do whatever. And then the race, the F1 race, is at 10 p.m. on Saturday night. So to answer your question, you know, where does it fit in people's schedules? Well, we know the UFC won't interfere. And its biggest competitor, I won't even throw hockey or basketball or college basketball. I mean, there's some fanatics that like it. I like it too, but it's early in the season. Their biggest competition will actually be college football, which is huge in the fall and on a Saturday. But even then, by 10 p.m. Pacific, I mean, that's 1 a.m. on the East Coast. A lot of games are done by then. I mean, you might have a Pac-10 game that starts at 7:30 and is wrapping up at 10:30 or whatever, and then the Hawaii game that kicks off, I think, at 8 p.m. or something like that for us, or I don't know.
Well, no, I don't mean that. As far as like the TV schedule goes, you can make it happen. It's, do you have the time? Because are you going to miss your game on Sunday, your NFL game? Are you going to miss the USC Trojans? Are you going to miss Manchester United? Like, something's got to go, right? You can't just sit in front of the TV, especially if you're a family guy. Like, you only got so much time. You got Bellator the night before. If you're into F1, you got qualifying Thursday, Friday. I practice and qualifying. Like, dude, sports are asking a lot of our time right now.
I think there's not as many lunatics as us that like all that. The good thing is Man U's on the international break.
Oh, and, true. Yeah.
So this season with me being here for a month, the NFL has just been like all about my team. And then I keep it on the red zone as I'm doing prep for spinning back click or whatever. I won't say the 10 o'clocks are over. Now it's time for the 1 o'clocks. The 1 o'clocks are over. Now it's time for Sunday Night Football. No, man, I got some stuff to do. So I try and pencil in with the Niners wherever they are, watch them, and then whatever else I can catch is gravy. Speaking of, tomorrow Peru plays Bolivia at 3 p.m. So the whole family's getting together for that game. That's going to be a lot of fun. And that's my goodbye shindig, because I leave for the States later that night. So yeah, that's why you're right. You have to budget your time, you know, and plan ahead. And, you know, I spent my last night here with some cousins and a cousin, some nieces and a nephew, and, you know, finally, you know, it's good. And luckily I have a 3-hour buffer on goes, but we're doing it Wednesday night for your Thursday morning delivery. And while we're at it, this will get turned over and you're going to get this. A lot of you are going to get this probably in about 5, 6, 7 hours. You'll have time for noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, Gozi and I are going to, and the whole team at Junkie, are going to be doing a spinning back click, an extra spinning back click show this week. And we're going to basically put a cherry on the sundae, put a bow on the 30 greatest fighters in UFC history, where we all kind of defend our picks and poke fun at other people's picks. It'll be a lively discussion. It'll be great. It'll be fun. So many of you were into it all 30 days that we released them. So don't miss it. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, another spinning backlick. You excited about that, guys?
Yeah. You know,
I've been kind of going some button heads like, fool, you know what you just did?
I don't think so. Because, you know, in looking at some of like what we're going to be asked and stuff like that, there's only one on there that really, really stumps me. But for the most part, like I can kind of, especially knowing our staff, I kind of understand why certain people are in certain spots. We're all different ages, you know, like some of the guys on staff and gal on staff, they weren't even around for some of these fights. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I kind of get why it would be hard to rank certain fighters in certain positions, but there are some things that I am kind of passionate about that I hope I do. I've kind of requested that I would like to talk about. So it should be a fun show, and it'd be fun to have some of the faces that you guys don't see all the time on Spinning Backlick. And George gets to be more of a panelist. You know, he gets locked up being the host all the time, so we get to hear a little bit more from him. So it should be fun.
Yeah, I think my main beef is if you didn't have Jones at one, I'll give you a pass. Okay, you got him at two. I mean, you better come strong with your argument. But if you didn't have him at two, I think the only thing I'll give you is, hey, Habib never lost. So I feel strong about GSP and Habib never lost. And I think the only other thing I can think of was what Royce Gracie did was so incredible back in the day. I can't measure it to the modern game. So he's at three. But other than that, I mean, I saw Jones pass four. And my main question is,
he was okay,
more than likely you're holding the PEDs against them. But if you are, then he shouldn't even be on your list at all. You either have a strict, I think that guy cheated, he's just off of it, or explain to me why he landed at 8 or 15 or whatever, because in essence, that's pretty much what might have cost him from being number one. Because when Jones was number one, GSP was almost always a number two. But when GSP was number one, Jones was a number two. And so that kind of threw things off a little bit. And trust me, up until when Jones be gone, I thought GSP was the greatest athlete ever. And I thought, because even though he had two losses, he had a second title. And Jones had never done anything like that. And then Jones went and won his second title. And I was like, oh, fuck. I mean, that's what? And that's an even bigger jump, you know, to go from 205 to basically unlimited. I mean, I guess 265 is the cap, but that's pretty remarkable. And he beat an interim champ, former interim champion, and gone. So he didn't get just anybody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, his career isn't over. And perhaps he gets dusted off on the way out, or maybe he even strengthens it more. We'll see. But it should be fun. Noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Let's get back to these cards. So I got you guys the information on the UFC card, all right? One more time. Prelims, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Main card, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. So it doesn't interfere with your primetime viewing at all. And if you're into Formula One, Saturday, 10 p.m. Pacific, 1 a.m. Eastern. Basically, that's technically a Sunday morning at 1 a.m. Eastern, just to avoid the confusion. If you're wondering about Bellator, here's how that breaks down. Prelims, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on YouTube and MMA Junkie. And main card, Showtime, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So anyway, I know we have the two interviews. I think we should get to it. Let's bring in Varys Adigazel. He's a young French fighter who's 4-1 overall. His most recent fight only went 16 seconds. Ended in round one. A lot of his fights have ended in round one. In fact, all of his wins have ended in round one. But he does seem like a prospect. And we are told he speaks good English, originally from Turkey, now living in France. They call him the problem. What's up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Gozer back. Today we're going to talk to a young fella named Bares Adigazelle, who's coming off a huge win over Alex Bertuzzi at Cage Warriors 162. All it took was 16 seconds, and he got the job done a few weeks ago. He's now 4-1 as a professional fighter. Hello, Bares. How are you?
Hey, everything's good. Everything's good. And you? Everything's good?
Well, kind of. We like Manchester United in soccer, and we just watched Champions League about 15 minutes ago, and they lost. So no good for me right now.
Okay. I'm not a big big football fan, but I understand.
You live in France. You're from Turkey. There's so many great teams like Galatasaray and PSG. Yeah. None of those teams? You don't like them?
No, I'm more Fenerbahce. I'm not a big fan of Galatasaray. Yeah. But, okay. You know, when I start MMA, I really stopped football, everything, you know. Yeah. I get a lot of injury, everything. So I want to get back in football, maybe playing, you know, in the weekend, something like this. But I'm really scared to play again in football. Yeah. And I don't really have time to watch everything, you know, follow all the league, Champions League. It's not easy to follow everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are you a full-time fighter or do you have a job?
My job is to be a coach. I'm a coach and fighter in the same time in my young age, you know. I'm doing both. But yeah, I'm in sport, you know. I'm doing MMA all day. Yeah. So I'm training in the morning, training in the afternoon, in night, giving lesson, you know, in MMA. And yeah, I'm doing this all time, yeah.
How old are you?
I'm only 24.
Okay. Could we say that maybe the last few years of Bellator and the UFC coming to France has helped your career, you know, more coaches, more training partners? I France has many great athletes. I anticipate that in the future, France is going to produce a lot of world champions.
Yeah, for sure. Where are you at?
No, you're good.
Right. I just don't see you.
You're there.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, for sure, you know, the first UFC when he come in France, that was crazy because, you know, when I was giving lesson, you know, after the first UFC, like maybe 20% more I have in my lessons, wow. You know, so that was like big up for the MMA in France, you know, so yeah, I can say it for sure that, you know, Bellator, PFL, right now UFC coming in France, it's big difference in the MMA.
I know for many years it wasn't sanctioned. I don't think it was illegal, but it just wasn't sanctioned. You couldn't have fights. So yeah, was it difficult to find training? Illegal. Oh, okay. Yeah, so was it hard to train MMA? Like did you have to go kind of undercover a little bit?
Like, you know, that was not illegal to train, but it was illegal to fight in France. So right. When I start fighting when it was illegal, so I fight in other country, you know. So my first to fight was in other country because it was illegal to fight in France. I have a lot of friends who fight everywhere in the world because it was forbidden. Fighting MMA, so. And, you know, like 2 years ago, the MMA was legalized in France.
Yeah.
So for sure that go up the MMA in fame and everything because all the media start talking about this, you know, about MMA. Right. So it was big difference.
Was it big what Francis Ngannou did a few weekends ago in Saudi Arabia as when he fought Tyson Fury? Was that big news in France?
Yes and no, because, you know, he's no more living in France, so we don't hear too much. But
that's true.
What he did in boxing, maybe that opened a lot of doors for the MMA fighters.
Yeah.
You know, for me, that's for sure.
That's true. I guess it's been about 5 years that he's been living in Vegas now and no longer in France. How about this? Where would you say that you got these skills to fight? More from your mom's side or more from your dad's side? Where do these genetics come from?
I think both. Both, for sure. Because, you know, when I grew up in Turkey, so when I was in Turkey, you know, that's not like Dagestan everything, but yeah, for sure, my uncle, you know, trained me a lot he was fighting a lot, you know, with all the cousins all day. So yeah, for me mentally, you know, you grow up a lot. So in the mother side and father side, it's the same, you know, we grow up like this, fighting every time, you know, it's in our blood.
Yep. Baris, tell us a little bit about this knockout, because a lot of times fighters will say they're happy that the fight ended the way it did, but they kind of wish it lasted a little bit longer because you put so much into your training and all that. How did you feel after? And then even, you know, maybe a couple days removed, was the feeling a little different?
You know, that was a lot of preparation for 16 seconds of fight, you know. That's I prepare like for, I lose my last fight, I just before this win. It was in Cage Warrior in May. So just after my fights, like after my lose, 4 days after, I was injured on my calf, but I start training directly, you know. So it was more than 5 months of preparation for 16 seconds of fight. I was not disappointed because I worked hard for this win, you know. That was not a chance. That was not something. That was really, really hard work, a lot of hard work. And I was thinking about this win, you know, all day for 5 months. Every day, every morning, I was thinking, you know, about this green thing is going to put in everywhere, you know. I was thinking about this every day. So when I win, first time when he get down, I look at him and I say, yeah, it's over. So, you know, you don't realize it in 5 seconds after when the referee come and, you know, put the hands like this, you say, yeah, it's finished. So you start, yeah, and I start going crazy. I'm not going to lie. I jump everywhere, you know. That was a crazy moment. I'm not going to lie.
So a performance like that, a lot of times they go viral, you know, throughout the world. And it's kind of like almost a little bit of a negotiation advantage that you have right now. When people pull something off like this, they get to say a little bit more about what they want to do next versus a promotion telling them you have to do this. So I guess the question for you is, what would you like your next step to be?
I was thinking, you know, about taking the Cage Warriors division, moving down in the bantamweight, because I'm a little bit small in the featherweight division and I can make 61 pretty easily, you know. So that was my first move. But after some negotiation, everything, you know, probably my next fight will not be there, you know. So I'm not going to lie. I'm small for now, you know. Maybe this win is a big win, but I'm small. I'm only 5 fights. I'm 24. I have a lot of to prove, you know. So I'm not going to say like, yeah, I have too much move, like negotiation. No. I have win. I have to win. I have to put more knockouts. I have to show everyone that I can make maybe big fights, like fight of the night, everything's like this. So when my first move is going to be in the international, you know, everyone is going to talk about me, you know. My first fight in international, everyone is going to say that, yeah, this dude is good, you know. This kid is not bad.
If we have this same conversation next year, at the same time, what do you think we would be talking about at that point?
If I can stay active, I can fight every 3 months, for sure I am going to be maybe one of the in a really big organization. I don't know where I would like to be in the UFC. I'm not going to lie. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do like 20 fights before going to the UFC. I want to win, and go to the UFC like pretty fastly, you know. And I really believe that I can do really good things in the UFC. So, you know, when I just talk about this, I'm really excited, you know. So I really hope that I can make good wins in my next fights. And in the next year, you know, when we are going to talk, I will be like a little bit more famous, a little bit more. I will have a little bit more money too. You know, it's important. And yeah, that's it.
In 1 year.
Yeah.
I would like to see you be your 4-1, 3 more fights in 2024. That would put you at 7-1, and maybe around this time, Dana White Contender Series. How does that sound?
I hear about the Dana White Series, you know, Contender Series. I don't know, when you are young, like 24 years old, you can do big fights, you know, like me. I know that I have power in my hands. I have a big chin. I can put big performance in a cage, you know. I'm not scared to exchange with my punches, you know. So I don't really believe that you have to maybe do directly Contender Series, you know. Maybe waiting to do two more fights, two more good wins, maybe two more good knockouts, and going directly in the UFC, you know. So I don't really know what I will do in the 24, the next year. Maybe I can lose, we don't know. So I'm not gonna lie, it's not the first choice, you know. So, but it's the manager thing, you know. If my manager say that it's the best choice, I will do it for sure.
Well, it's interesting because I understand what you mean. It'd be nice to just go straight to the UFC. But what happens is you're going to have to always be ready. Your weight's going to always be ready. And you're probably going to have to come in last minute. So yeah. If you're okay with that, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for you. But Dana White Contender Series is getting pretty big. It's on ESPN now. And it's on a Tuesday. A lot of people watch. And they, you know, they highlight the fighters pretty good. You have an advantage in that you speak English. There's a lot of fighters that are foreigners that don't even speak the language. But the fact that you can speak the language, you've got some really nice finishes on your resume. That's kind of what Dana White likes. And you just got to fight your ass off that night, win or lose. He has taken a few guys that have lost, but of course you want to win. But you know, it's not a bad option, but I understand what you mean. It'd be easier to just go straight to the UFC.
Yeah, but like I said, you know, it's not my. I'm not thinking about this right now. I'm really focused about maybe I just talk something. You know, is not right. You know, to not go to the contenders, big performance, and going to the UFC. Maybe it's a really good choice too. And I have to talk this about, you know, my manager Mason. You know, so. I'm a fighter, so I'm really focused about fighting, you know, and all the things with around fighting, you know, all the media things, manager things. I don't really want to think about this, you know. I really want to be focused in my training, in my fighting, trying to improve my skills, you know, every day, you know, trying to be better, a better fighter, more complete fighter, you know. So it's my main thing, you know, right now. Young, trying to win my next fight, you know, and you know, not only win, you know, win like a good way, you know, not just like coming here and just putting a little bit, you know, easy performance, win and go home, you know, trying to win, but a really good way, you know, that's important for me.
Whereas, what about the other options in the sense of it's the same sport, it's MMA. But, you know, like in the PFL, they do season format, right? Yeah. Something where you have to fight, you know, every 30 days. Would something like that, is that interest you? Do you like being really, really active, or do you like having a little bit of space in between your fights?
It's good. It's a good question. I want to be active, but not too much too, you know. It's good to rest a little bit, you know, because, you know, it's a really hard sport, you know. It's not an easy sport. We get injured a lot of time in training, you know. Every day you woke up, you know, you don't really know if you're going to get your nose broke, your arm broke, maybe your knees is going to be fucked up, you know. We don't really know what can happen in your training day, you know. So fighting every month, like you said, it's really difficult, you know. So I don't really know. I'm not going to lie. I don't know.
Well, we will definitely keep in touch with you. And congrats on the most recent win. We'll see how 2024 plays out. Perhaps one day we'll meet in Vegas, just like I said, under that scenario, or for PFL. I'm not sure what the future of Bellator is, but it's nice to meet you. I do want to ask you one last thing, though, before we leave. You got to be honest with me, Barris. This is a man-to-man question. Have you and your cousins ever gone to a Fenerbahce game and gotten in a fight before the game or after the game or during the game? Come on, be honest.
I was a kid when I go to see football games, you know. When I was living in Turkey, I was like I was born there, and I come in France when I was 11, you know, so that I was pretty young, you know. But I saw a lot of match because I play a lot of football when I was kid. And I saw a lot of fights where I was living in. I was living in Izmir, you know, so that was not a lot of big match. But, you know, I saw some soccer match, and it was pretty good, and a lot of fights too in the match.
All right. Just curious. Well, thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care, Bears.
Yeah, take care. Thank you.
Seems like a nice guy, the problem. The only problem I have is I wish he would embrace Dana White Contender Series just a little bit more. He seemed to kind of almost think like it's a almost still Cage Warrior level-esque. I guess he's in a way right, but you win and you're on the roster. You know what I mean? It's like that one final fight to be on the roster. Mm-hmm. Or you sit around and wait for that phone call when you're a last minute guy. If he's always ready, I suppose that's good, but I don't see anything wrong with Dana White Contender Series nowadays. It almost seems like you have a chance to endear yourself to the president and the matchmakers. They're all right there.
I think it just comes down to who you are, because the one thing I've never liked about Dana White Contender Series, and granted it's changed, you know, before it was five guys fighting for usually one to two contracts. Now it's like everybody gets a contract. But at the end of the day, what I don't like is about the show, the only thing that I nitpick on, is you have to go out there and fight a certain way to get in. And sometimes just matchups, situations, it's just not in your favor to do that. You know what I mean? And it can put you in a rough spot. But yeah, I see what could work out from in that situation. If you look at like this show is, we're going to be going on 17 years. If you look at prospects that we've brought you before in the past, Conor McGregor was a prospect when we brought him on the show. Very similar, really, when you think about it, because it was Cage Warriors as well. Daniel Cormier was 1-0, I think, when we brought him on the show. King Molo All, kind of the same thing. So when we bring you a prospect, it means something. So we'll have to see.
Ronda Rousey, too. Remember, she went through tough enough and then became a pro. Yeah, we'll see how it works out for this guy. It was fun hearing about him and his cousins growing up, going to soccer games, fighting amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. He definitely has the fighting genes in him, so we wish him the best. And I just love that he already speaks some English and can communicate, you know, so we'll see what happens. Let's blast through some news real quick. If something sounds like it's up your alley, goes, I mean, go ahead, chime in. There's not too much of the exciting, sexy stuff, but one thing that stood out to me was seeing Jason Jackson and Logan Storley kind of game planning based off of Storley's fights with Yaroslav Amosov. You know, I don't understand why fighters don't watch a lot more film and don't have those types of conversations. You know, I hear fighters say something or whatever, but never where you hear, man, we actually chatted about it for 30 minutes. I would ask a teammate, hey, listen, you fought this guy, can we chat about it? Not only that, can we sit down and watch your fight and tell me what you felt at this moment, at that moment? You know what I mean? And maybe I just feel like you can pick something up there. And I think that's one of the things I like about the NFL is those guys are always picking up on something.
Yeah. I don't see how it can hurt. You know, here in Vegas at Extreme Couture, there are a lot of middleweights, and a lot of them have fought similar opponents. So they have that opportunity where they sit down and they try and get some information. Now, what I can, and I've heard from fighters before, is sometimes when you do too much of that, you just tend to overthink things and forget, you know, the X's and O's and how you got there. But I think that's kind of up to the coach, right, to just dial the fighter back in. But you need to have as much information as you could possibly get going into a fight. It's like that for everything in life. Everything in life, the better you prepare, usually the better you perform, right? Whether it's work, school, a test, that's what we do. And I don't see how it could hurt.
I would rather over prepare and my mind was cluttered, so something happened. Mm-hmm. I think I could look myself in the mirror and go, man, I guess I over prepared or whatever, then under prepare and then just get my block knocked off and then just think, geez, like this was all there, you know, like it was in the highlights. Why didn't I study this? Why didn't I see these tendencies? I mean, there's something to be said for usually how someone fights, they're similar, you know, like when you face a running team, they usually ran the ball pretty good all season. That's why they're running it against you. It's up to you to stop it. And same with teams that pass the ball a ton. You know, they got a lot of wide receivers and a great quarterback and a great offensive line. And anyways, but I don't know. That story just kind of jumped out of me. Here's another one. The UFC Shanghai show has moved from China and now it's in Las Vegas. So, I don't know what might be going on with this. They didn't give any reasons, at least according to the article by Nolan King a few days ago, or maybe it was earlier today. But the switch has remained, has happened, hasn't publicly been put out there or anything like that. And so me, just if I put my tinfoil hat, I know President Biden and President Xi are supposed to meet or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I know that obviously there have been some tensions between China and Taiwan, and obviously the U.S. would defend Taiwan or something like that. And so I'm just wondering if it's one of those types of situations where, like, you know how right now if you're an American, don't go to Russia. I wonder if it's just one of those things.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past anyone. And I think that's smart. You just never know what could be going on that side of the country or that side of the world at the time. And that can complicate a lot of things. So I totally could see something like that. You know, it sucks because there were a lot of fighters that were actually hoping to be on that card in China, you know, and gunning for that. Early on in a couple months ago, even just trying to get on that card and be a piece of it. And now it falls apart and it's back here in Vegas. But hopefully that's not a situation that looms like that going forward. I think I think it's just bad timing right now.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. Have you seen those videos of Tony Ferguson working out with David Goggins?
Yeah, I have.
What do you think of that?
I just don't see it. Okay, this is my biggest problem with Tony Ferguson. I think he's a tremendous fighter. But every fight camp has a different theme that he's addressing. And I don't know that it's ever really himself that gets addressed. So it's always like, this camp or this coach. Okay, I got to get away from them. I got to get away from this person. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, when really has cardio ever been like a problem? I mean, the last fight he had, he didn't look too great. I just don't see it as this being the answer. To me, it's the fighting style that's the answer. You know, that's what he needs to shore up, decisions that he makes during fights. I think that's what he's got to do. And to do that, I think you got to kind of look at yourself to get that answer. And I don't know that he's doing that. To me, that's dangerous.
Mm. Yeah. And so for those of you that don't know, David Goggins is a former Navy SEAL who I guess is more of a motivator nowadays. And he's been on the Joe Rogan podcast. He's been out there a lot as someone who basically, pushes boundaries, which is what he did in his life. He overcame, I guess, an abusive father and rough upbringing and joined the Navy, became a Navy SEAL. And now I got to admit, I've heard some stuff from him that were pretty amazing. Does it interest you? I can tell you something real quick.
Sure. Yeah, no, he's very motivated.
You know, he once said that... And this is kind of close to me in certain ways, but I'm going to keep that part private. But there are a lot of people that have a rough upbringing And a lot of times they'll lean on it as an excuse that, well, I had a rough upbringing, so I maybe wasn't guided in the right way. And so therefore, I've never been good at my latter stages of life, whether that's being a brother, uncle, cousin, father, whatever. And Goggins said that even though he got his ass whooped, and I'm pretty sure his dad died or is out of his, no, I don't think he's out of his life, but they just had a not so good relationship. He said that he didn't want to use that as an excuse, and he actually wanted to learn from that blueprint of, okay, I got dealt a bad hand, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to deal that hand to someone else. And I don't know, it was pretty interesting just kind of hearing him say, you know, I have to learn how to be a good person, a good this, a good that, you know, from others or books or whatever, because I wasn't given that, you know, guidance and wisdom by my dad or whatever. And so a lot of times when I hear people say that, I don't shit on them. I just say, you know, but I've heard people say that that's what motivated them to be someone better. Almost like you'll hear two different stories. Hey, that guy's a drunk. Oh, man, it runs in his family. His dad was worse. And then you'll hear, man, that guy doesn't drink a drop. Oh, it's because his dad was a horrible drunk. He wanted nothing to do with that. Well, those are two instances of, well, I didn't know any better. I got drunk with dad. And next thing you know, I'm an alcoholic. And then the other instance is I wanted to be nothing like dad or mom or whoever. And therefore, I've never really touched. That almost seems like an overreaction, you know, but still, I'm not saying people don't figure it out, but I don't know. I just figured it's never late to change. And if you want to change, you can change. Just because you may not have been mentored by someone or had a figure, you know, an adult figure in your life, it doesn't mean that you still can't do it. It's tougher for sure, but it's not impossible.
It all comes down to what you want personally. If you want that change, mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times in life, it's people that want you to change. But that's different from what you want as an individual. You could listen to everything they're going to say and they could be right. But if it's not what you want, then what's the point, right? That person needs to be able to want that change within themselves. And there's so many factors that go into that feeling. But anybody can do it. Like they say that personality is somewhat, like if you're a parent and you're raising your kids, right around 21 is where your kid's personality is going to be set. Like whoever they are at that age is roughly the mold of who they're going to be later on. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they can't change, but it gives you a good idea of where you're going to be. And change can happen at any time. It's just whether or not the person wants to do it. And a lot of times it comes down to fear, because to make those changes, you have to look within yourself and admit that you've made mistakes. And a lot of people don't want to do that.
Is it almost irritating to hear Tony do media now for you?
Yeah.
Me too.
It is.
This. When he was on our show probably the first three times, I fucking loved it. Like, I would actually leave the studio just going, man, I'm going to get going with my day and do things, because this guy just had a really, really good swag to him. Of course, he was winning, and but then he started going a little bit overboard with the proverbs and the motivation. Sometimes he wouldn't even answer a question. And you're right, during the skit, man, I had to go back to Minnesota and find my own team, get with Uncle Brock or Big Brother Brock, you know. And then another time it was like, yeah, man, I went to Albuquerque and Vegas and tried out coaches and I decided on this guy. Yeah. Then another time, those coaches weren't good for me. I needed to find someone that could humble me. I needed to be near home. You know, I get that he's trying some stuff, but, you know, in a few fights, he's actually been competitive. It's just he's getting older and all he fights is fucking beasts. So I don't know, man. You know, we were talking about overflooding the brain a few minutes ago, and I'm just wondering if that's kind of what's almost happened to him.
Could be. I feel like he's got the same game plan in every fight, and the game plan is beat Tony Ferguson. And sometimes
Goggins is one of those guys where if I could have lunch with him, then okay. but I don't think I need to have more than one session with him for an upcoming MMA fight. Paddy Pimblett likes to get the fight to the ground. Let's work on what he's strong at, how to defend it, and let's work on, you know, putting me in terrible positions or whatever. Tony's never really had a cardio problem. That guy won 25 rounds in fucking Mexico against Rafael Dos Anjos. And I'm talking about the DF, the capital. You know, that's a 10,000 feet altitude. So that's never been a problem. And he recovered from ACL in 5 months. You can't break that guy. It's his techniques. You know what I mean? It's his techniques and it's his age. He's just lost a step in terms of like when a punch is coming before, he might get that hand up, deflect it, move that chin, move his head, not take it as bad. But he's had some rough ones, you know, and it just doesn't seem like he really comes to grips with that.
The best guys to go to for advice, in my opinion, in mixed martial arts, or go to the guys that are most successful. Like, instead of beating down on a Goggins door, and this is a guy that has zero experience in our sport. You know, I'm sure he's a fan of it, but he doesn't have experience at that high level. Why not knock on, I don't know, Demetrius Johnson's door? Mm-hmm. How the fuck have you done this for so long and been so successful? What are you doing? I'd be asking those questions. GSP's door. What is it about you that made you the person you are, right? If you look outside the sport, I mean, I'm sure they could give you very good advice, but I don't know that they can give you good direction.
Yeah. You know, Mark Montoya protected Alistair Overeem's chin pretty good. Greg Jackson got through mentally through GSP, who used to kind of suffer a little bit from anxiety and, you know, performing or whatever. I'll ask you this question, and I know the audience must sometimes roll their eyes because we do push this name on people a lot, but he's our guy, Eric Nixick, right? Let me ask you this question, Goes. If before Strickland fought Izzy, so you don't know what happened, you just kind of have that feeling of what we think might happen. Remember, we didn't think Strickland had much of a chance, right? Okay. So the fight doesn't happen, and I said, Goes, who has a better chance? Strickland to beat Anderson Silva? Or Tony Ferguson to beat Paddy Pimblett? What would you have said if you didn't know the result of the Strickland fight?
You mean Adesanya, right?
Yeah, what did I say? Yeah, you're right. You're right. Adesanya.
Or what was the other one? Or Pimblett?
Yeah. Do you think Ferguson has a better chance of beating Pimblett? Or do you think Strickland has a better chance of beating Adesanya? The Strickland-Adesanya fight hasn't happened yet. So channel your brain back to last August and what you thought of it.
I would have thought Sean Strickland
has a better chance to beat Adesanya than Ferguson has of beating Paddy Pimblett.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why.
You just crushed my whole...
No, I think you're still right. I get where you're going with that. But for me, the guy that you picked, he has a guy like Eric Nixick in his corner, and I do admire Eric very much. But what Sean Strickland has that a lot of fighters don't have is he just doesn't give up, ever. He does not give up that entire fight. He never stops coming forward. His cardio is on point every single fight. That, to me, gives you a shot. You know you have 5 rounds to get it done. Mm-hmm. With Tony Ferguson, you only have 3 rounds to get it done. And you just know right away, like, when things aren't going to go his way. You know right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the point I was going to make was I thought Ferguson has a better chance of beating Pimblett. And so, therefore, I would say if this guy has been able to do what he's been able to do with Ngannou and Strickland and, you know, some of the other success stories, Manel Kopp is kind of becoming a title challenger now. I got to pick this guy's brain. He lives close to me, so I don't have to leave my family, and he's successful. Hey, create for me a game plan that will make me successful in this fight. I don't know. I'm into it because I'm into Tony and I'm into Paddy Pimblett. I wish those two were a little bit more excited about each other's fight. But
the thing that bothers me too about that matchup is I like to look at the UFC a lot like a business, and those matchmakers are very smart. You know, it doesn't always work out for them. But they're smart in the sense that when they put fighters together, there's always a reason because it is a business at the end of the day. and that's their guy, right? Paddy Pimblett. They want him to be a star, and I don't think they're going to put him up against the guy that they believe is going to beat him.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out. That's on December 16th, UFC 296. It's part of the main card. But listen, we're going to wrap up for today. We got Kenny Florian, as far as the news goes, sorry. We got Kenny Florian coming up. He is a color commentator for Professional Fighters League, and they got their big show, right? It's PFL 10, 2023, the finals. It's on November 24th, which is Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. They're in Washington, D.C., 6 title fights and a lot of key pivotal matchups featuring some of their big names like Kayla Harrison and a newly acquired Derek Brunson. We'll be right back. Talk to Ken Flo. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to talk to you with Kenny Florian and discuss PFL 10 2023 PFL World Championship. It's on Friday, the 24th, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. It's going to be a fun time with 6 title fights and some nice key pivotal fights featuring some of the greatest, some of the best PFL talent. Kenny, of course, color commentator now for a few years with PFL. What's up, Kenny? How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man. We're getting ready for the big event, PFL 10, their finals. Wanted to ask you, you've been a part of some big cards, including title fights and all that. Tell me, how do they compare? I mean, we get 6 at once over here. You know what I mean? It's different from the other promotions that we cover, where sometimes we get 1, sometimes 2, but this is 6. Like, that's pretty intense.
Absolutely. I think what makes this a little bit different, what differentiates this from, say, like other events, other championship fights that I've been able to be a part of is, you know, again, these are 6 world championships in one night. So not only is it a world championship, these are individuals who have been able to withstand the grind, get to the end of the year. It's been a culmination, a buildup to this point. And 6 fighters' lives are going to change, you know, no question about it.
What's the closest year that you remember that you had that resembled a PFL season where you can tell us, hey, look, I've kind of been through something similar?
Gosh, as far as things that as a
you know,
fighter,
like maybe 4 fights or 3 fights in a year that led towards either a title contender fight or a title fight itself. Did you ever have anything like that? Like that, you know, where your body was through the ringer, which I imagine how some of these fighters are going to be, you know, staggering to the finish line, maybe.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think I did, let's see, either 3 or 4 fights over the course of 8 months or something like that. And that was pretty tough. You know, I think that it's one thing to do the fights. And again, people kind of forget about this is it's the preparation for the fight. You know, the training camps are such a grind. Especially if you're talking about, you know, getting ready for a 5-rounder, it's just a whole different type of training camp. You're doing a lot more, or in my case, it was a lot more. You're doing more rounds. You're doing more conditioning. So your body is just that much more tired. And I can't even imagine it. And for some of the guys like Ibba Kasaganai or Gabriel Braga, this is their 5th fight. This is the 5th fight, like, since March in some cases, which is like, my body hurts just thinking about that.
Yeah, no doubt. You've been with the PFL for a few years now. What's something you appreciate that doesn't get talked about that maybe you'd like to give it some shine? You guys are always innovative over there.
Yeah, you know, I think that the production team should be applauded because they are really always trying to do something a little bit different, right? I think they're trying to separate themselves from other promotions. So obviously there's the setup, how it is different. Their format is very different. But production-wise, they're always looking to try to push the envelope and try different things. And George Greenberg is a guy that I've known over when he was at Fox Sports. And he's just one of the best guys in the business, period. And yeah, always willing to try to do different things and being open-minded. And for that, it's awesome to be a part of.
I'm glad you brought it up. I'll just echo something, then Goes has a few questions. It is awesome when they go and send it to a fight party at a bar
or yeah. that fighter's house, especially when it's foreign territory, and to see that passion and those people riding with that fighter, if it's Greenberg that gets the credit for that, I think that's outstanding.
Yeah, cool.
Kenny, I want to talk to you a little bit about OAM. George brought up a very good point in the last time we interviewed him that we had just not really thought of to this moment, but can you maybe share where you think he ranks in Canadian MMA, the fighters that have been produced? Because obviously GSP pops out as number one.
Right.
But OAM, man, those credentials, is he number two? Is he number three? I mean, he's right there, isn't he?
And no question about it. I think he's, well, without a question, top five. But certainly, I think there's a strong argument that he's top three, right? You have Rory McDonald, George St. Pierre, and he still has a bunch of years ahead of him, I think. You know, I think when you talk about his overall game, his durability, his intelligence, and now his finishing ability, the dude is an absolute problem. His size, he's massive as a lightweight. And it seems like he always has an answer. And now he's gotten to the point, confidence-wise, momentum-wise, where he can pick you apart and then finish you. Whereas before, he'd kind of pick you apart, outsmart you, outpoint you. But now he's really coming into his own as a mixed martial artist. And as we mentioned, having four fights in a calendar year is no joke. This is his second time doing that. Being a back-to-back PFL champion is something that is extremely difficult to do. Not many have done it. He's on his way to do that. Clay Collard is a very dangerous dude, so not going to be easy getting by him. But OAM is certainly going to be a favorite heading into that fight. And it's a real pleasure seeing him fight. He's very smart. He knows how to out-calculate you. And we don't really see him get hurt too often. And balancing all of those things shows that he's really getting close to a level of mastery for sure.
Kenny, there are a few storylines going into these fights that I wanted to get your opinion on as far as what goes on in your head. I know leading up to a fight, you know, if we look at OAM, he's kind of brought it out there. He said he's thinking about retirement. Mm-hmm. You look at Kayla Harrison and having the opponent switch and having to bounce back. There's so many little storylines. But at the end of the day, when that cage door closes, does it all go away or does a little piece of it still resonate within you?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think it certainly shouldn't be there. In my experience, it's ultra important to be as present as possible when you're doing something as dangerous as mixed martial arts fighting. And if you do carry any of that into the cage with you, it can actually detract you from what you're trying to do, right? I think in some ways, it can be motivating, right? Just knowing, hey, this is my last fight or this could be my last fight. But I also feel like that's something that you should feel anyway, right? Because you're one injury away from maybe never competing again. But in some cases, I think it can add a lot of unneeded pressure. And your goal as a mixed martial artist is to focus on that person in front of you who is genuinely trying to hurt you. So I think that in some cases, it's not advantageous to bring that in with you. But that's what being a professional athlete is, right? It's kind of like, how do I get my outside life, whatever's going on outside of the cage or outside of the professional athlete sphere, so I can just focus on this task at hand. And the best professional athletes are the ones who are able to take that out and just kind of be present in the moment. And not always an easy thing to do. I wish I had say that I mastered that over the course of my career. I certainly did not.
Kenny, the father-son relationship, coach-fighter, we see that in boxing quite a bit throughout history. In MMA, we don't see it that often. It has happened, but we don't see it too often. With Josh Silveira, can you do you have an explanation as to maybe why we don't see that as much in mixed martial arts as we do in boxing?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, that boxing is a much older sport. So I think it's a little bit more common. I also think that, you know, we probably have, I guess at this stage of the game, maybe more you know, or have had more boxers that end up being coaches. I think now we're kind of seeing that new crop of former mixed martial arts fighters that are turning into coaching. Not a whole lot have gone that route. And I'm sure, you know, not a whole lot have had kids that are actually going that route. So just that dynamic, I think, is a bit more rare. But I got to say, you know, without getting too cheesy or too emotional, like, it's beautiful to see that relationship between Josh and Conan. And I don't know how Conan's able to really keep his calm and composure throughout that process. You know, he says when we're going out there on fight week, he's like, I am coach. As soon as that fight is over, he goes, I go back to being daddy again. And, you know, finding those roles and sticking to them isn't very, you know, easy for a lot of people. And the way that that Conan has been able to manage that, and the way that Josh has been able to do that as well, is a huge credit to their family. Obviously, they have a very close relationship. But, you know, for a lot of us, you know, it's hard for you to take advice from dad, you know, right? And I think that comes from just raising your kid right, having that beautiful and open relationship, and seeing that dynamic between Josh and Conan has been amazing. And seeing how he's matured since last year is also extremely impressive. So it's hard not to like Josh or his dad for that matter. Conan's been one of those guys that I've always been extremely impressed with, his kindness and how he approaches people. He's a scary looking dude, but man, what a gentle giant he is.
Kenny, you've seen up close and on TV when Joe Rogan looks into the eyes of the fighters as they're doing their stare down, and then he's got to do the quick interview. How about you on fight week? Do you have any type of routine, whether it's a question you might ask the fighter or a look that kind of gives you a feel either who is looking more prepared or more nervous or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a good thing. I don't know if it's any one thing. One common question that I try to ask, just because I do think it's a relatively good indicator, not maybe a perfect indicator of what's going on mentally or how a fighter prepares, but I always ask a fighter if they watch video on their opponent or not. And I ask that question. I also ask why. And some people will say, oh, I don't like getting into the head of my opponent. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, so I don't watch any fights. Right? I always say that person's not prepared in my mind. If they say, I don't watch it because, you know, I let my coaches do that and whatever, like, okay, that's a little bit better of an answer. I think those that are watching with a very clinical eye and are able to separate their emotions from the fight and say, I'm watching this because I want to get a good handle on what they're doing. And I think that's more interesting to me. And it shows that maybe they're a little bit more in tune, a little bit more confident, but certainly, you know, that's not always a perfect indicator, right? I think body language, as you mentioned, is huge. The things that they say, the way that they say it, you know, whether it's eye contact, certain intensity, tightness in their body, you know, little things like that, I think are always good indicators. And a lot of times it's just what they don't say that kind of communicates more, right? Just how their body reacts and how they're kind of walking around fight week shows whether they're relaxed, tense, nervous, all those things. But again, even that's not perfect. Fighting and, you know, doing, you know, figuring out what the result could be is it's certainly not a science. It is so difficult for me anyways to pick a fight, who's going to win, who's going to lose, and why it's going to happen. You know, so many times the better fighter does not win. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's injuries or just the way fights play out, you know, lame judges' decision. I mean, there's just so much that goes on in this sport. I can't figure it out as far as picking fights right, and I'll tell you that right now.
Let's end with this. Can you explain to the audience something we hear a lot in fighting when color commentators are chiming in and talking strategics? See if you can apply it to Magomed Karimov versus Sadibou C. I'm really intrigued by this matchup. Feints, the word feints. I imagine Sadibou would be more comfortable standing all 25 if he has to, right? And he's going to face a guy that is pretty dangerous on the ground and has become dangerous on the feet as well. But what purpose do the feints have for either party where you may have picked up, at least I think I have a little bit, and what it does, since, again, you've studied film and been in the cage?
Yeah, no, George, that's a great question. It's something that is extremely important, I think, in fighting. And I think it's something that is often misunderstood, even amongst fighters. And I think that the function of a feint is, you know, it kind of works. The way I like to explain it is that it works as a disinformation campaign, meaning, you know, the information that I'm giving you, I want you to really question whether the things that I'm doing is either real or not real. And the more that you have to process it, the slower you're going to have to be to move and react to it, right? So it's something, let's say, like something simple, like a double leg and an overhand. Just with those two things, if I'm able to threaten with it, or at least give the illusion of a threat, then something along the way is going to falter, meaning you're going to level change when you shouldn't. You're going to drop your hands when you should. Your hands are going to go up high when you should. Then it gives you a double leg, right? So it's those kind of things that you want to kind of weave a story. You're kind of telling a story to your opponent and lying along the way, right? You're kind of getting them to jump when they shouldn't, or getting them to not jump when they should have jumped, right? So you're really trying to confuse your opponent as much as possible. And if you're able to confuse them, you're getting them to kind of follow you. And if you're getting them to follow you, it doesn't mean you're always going to win, but it gets them to kind of like fall into some of the things that you're setting them up with. So it is absolutely essential.
It seems like it can happen in so many ways too. Even two guys locked up against the cage, and it looks like it's just going to be a breakaway, right? So that we center ourselves back in the smart cage or the octagon or the ring or whatever it is. But during that time, you lull them and boom, here comes an elbow.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. And the last thing, I know I said last question, but one more. Are punches to the side of the head or kicks to the head right here, like temple and then back here, are they becoming more intentional now? Or most of the time, are they landing there because there was movement from someone's defense? You really were aiming for the button, the chin, and it just happened to... What are you finding from fighters that they're purposely aiming for the ear or the side of the head? Because so many people just get wobbled by those shots.
Dude, another great question. So the times, I believe, I think Diego Nunes caught me in the chin and kind of got me to drop to one knee. But the other times that I've been rocked, like at BJ Penn, one time I was in sparring at TriStar, I got hit on the side, like kind of like the side of the head, kind of closer to the ear. And those are the ones where you feel like you're either stepping in potholes, or there was one time, like when BJ hit me, I felt the whole octagon like shift. Like I felt like it was just like I was in an earthquake a little bit. And those have always been the ones that have hurt me the most in my experience. And for me, those are the shots that really take away your equilibrium, because they affect the inner ear, I guess. I'm not that I'm a medical doctor or anything like that, but I think that affects your inner ear and takes away your equilibrium, takes away your balance. And I think that, listen, I don't think people are purposely, in my experience, trying to hit behind the head. I think more often than not, it's the other opposing fighter moving their head at a time where maybe I was trying to catch you in the temple or in the cheek or in the jaw or in the nose. You moved your head and that's on you. That's your bad. If there is no movement, let's say I'm hitting you and I'm like, you're in the turtle position on the ground and I'm just like whacking away with my elbow in the back of your head. Well, that's a different story, right? That would be a fault on me. So, you know, and sometimes you're just excited. You want to just hit the guy and you don't even realize what you're doing, you know, in a fight, it can get, you can kind of get your blinders on a little bit. So there's a lot going on there. But I do think it's oftentimes a more effective strike than, say, relying on it hitting someone in the jaw and just knocking them out, because I do think it affects your overall body when you hit and you're able to affect that inner ear. So I don't think people are doing it on purpose, but Yeah, those are the shots that I think that can change a fight in an instant.
For sure. I know there's going to be a lot of great techniques on the 24th, and that's why we'll be tuning in. It is a pay-per-view, folks. $49.99 gets you 6 title fights, the return of Kayla Harrison, the debut of Derek Brunson. So they've definitely done their job on their end, stacking the card. This is Kenny Florian, of course, who will be on the color commentating team along with Randy Couture, Sean O'Connell. They do a great job. And thank you, as always, Kenny, for the time here on MMA Junkie Radio, man. Break a leg, and we'll see you on the 24th.
Always great talking to you guys. Thanks so much.
Good stuff as always, man. Good talking to Approving while I'm in Purdue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kenny's done a lot for the sport. I mean, when you think about his entire class, when I say that, I mean the Ultimate Fighter. What Dana thinks of them is pretty outrageous. Like, he really
loves asking him about after asking him about the feints, I started to think of more strategic questions I wanted to ask him. Feints are the shit in our sport. Oh, yeah. I think I think they really, really are very interesting. I think smoke screens, like what Leon Edwards did to Kamaru Usman, you know, when he kind of occupied his hands to set up that kick, like that was really, really brilliant. So anyway, I'm glad he did that, and we'll see if we can get him on a little bit more often to talk about stuff like that. But for now, we're going to bow out, folks. We had 2 guests, and we got a chance to talk about the 2 upcoming cards this weekend, Bellator 301 on Friday and UFC Fight Night, Allen versus Craig on Saturday. 2 really, really solid cards as we start to wind up the year. And one more reminder for Spinning Backlick, Thursday, November 16th. So basically, it's already today on the East Coast. It's tomorrow for those of you on the West Coast. But whenever you get this, just know Thursday, November 16th, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, a live second Spinning Backlick for the week. The whole cast will be on there from Junkie, and we're going to defend our top 30 picks for the greatest UFC fighters ever. Anyway, all right, I'm out of here. So goes. Thanks, as always, for your support and for tuning in. And we'll see you tomorrow for Spinning Backlick. And then don't forget, Mondays, every Monday, Spinning Backlick, the OG show, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Take care. Go out and be a champion.